Fourth and final hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you today. Chase is off for the week. He'll be back with us on Monday. Marquise Munson back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. We now say hello and good afternoon to Hal Gill, a.k.a. Skillsy, hashtag Ask Hal. Hal, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Good to hear your voice again. How are things as we inch a little bit closer to return to play?
Well, my kids have tried as hard as they could to kill me. but I made it through, I think, for the most part. We're coming out the other side, I hope. We got some sports going on in limited capacity, so that helps things out. But, yeah, I'm doing all right. I'm hanging in there. I'm excited to have hockey back. It was fun last week being at the rink and having something to do.
Yeah, no doubt. We were talking about
getting to see you, D-Mac. I got to see you. I haven't seen you in forever.
I was so happy to see you there as we kind of came into the arena together. That was awesome. It made my day, too. So thank you for that. That got me going that morning. We were talking about Peter Forsberg. It's his 47th birthday today. What was he like to play against?
Probably the most dynamic one. I'll put him top five most dynamic players I've ever played against. The physicality he brought with his skill was probably better. You know, there was a handful of guys that could do that, that could turn on a dime and blow right through your shoulder. You know, he was doing, you know, we've seen the Philip Forsberg reverse hit. That was invented by Peter Forsberg. And I had no idea it existed until I found out the hard way. And, you know, you're going, he's a skilled player. So you want to go in and for me, I wanted to establish myself as a physical dominance. And I'd go in thinking I'd poke it off him. And of course you're in Colorado and you're having a hard time breathing anyway. And then he'd turn around and blow his shoulder right through your chest. And more often than not, his helmet would be right in line with my chin. And so his helmet and his shoulder just exploded right through my body. And it was honestly, the first time it happened to me, it was about a period and a half before I felt like I could breathe and felt like I could go back and play hockey. It was a struggle. But then at the same token, he's going out there scoring goals. He's not going out there thinking he's just going to, go bang bodies. And so what do you do with a player like that? He was an anomaly. He was tough to play against. Talk about careers cut short and what he could have done if he had the longer time on the ice. It's kind of a shame.
Yeah. So I mean, you just talked about that, and so obviously that stood out. But, I mean, he won so many awards. He's a Hall of Famer. So it was just one of those things. And, by the way you were describing him, is that – I guess here in the States, I know he's from Sweden, is it when we say he's country strong, is that the best way to put it for him? He was just country strong?
Farm boy strength. Some guys like that, I think, has a lot to do with being on their edges, and I feel like he was always on his edge, and with his foot problem, it took away from his game, and, that's when that's the strength of your game, it's tough to figure out how to play that way, and he put a lot of strain on it because he was so strong on his edges.
Well, Roman Josi has been named a finalist for the Norris Trophy. I don't think that's really going to get anybody falling out of their chair to hear that.
No but way, it is really?
I know. What?
No way.
You've got to be kidding me. Breaking news. But it is the first time it's happened in his career, and it has been made official. He's, the three finalists nobody to sneeze at, right? When you think about Carlson and Hedman along with Roman Josi, all three tremendous players and tremendous at what they do. But you see him and we see him game in and game out and in practice on every day. And still, you know, a lot of times, as you know, Hal, you can take people for granted if you're around them all the time and you don't realize how good they are, where observers from afar maybe appreciate them a little bit more, but that's not the case with him. I mean, even seeing him all the time, I think we appreciate him even more because of that, because we know how good he is.
Yeah, he just ripped a highlight reel goal in that little scrimmage or whatever they had in practice the other day. And, you know, of course, you know, he skates around guys and gets the puck and finds a scoring area. And, that's what he does so well. And, you know, the more you break down his game, the more you look at what he does, I don't think there's anyone better at, and this includes forwards. There's not too many guys that can go down the boards from the point and find a way into the slot and make things happen the way Roman has and does consistently and does when the team needs him. And that's the big thing for me is that, you know, Pete Weber was talking about it the other day. Is where would the Preds be without him? You know, without Roman and what he's done. And he's not just solid defensively. He's not getting his points just on the power play. He's had to work for everything he's gotten. The top six for the Preds haven't been as strong as they probably should have been or would have liked to have been. And he really drove the offense from the back end. So I just don't see as good as Hedman is. I don't think Hedman has had the year that Carlson and Yossi have had. And as good as Carlson is, I think he relies on his supporting staff so much. I really think you have to be, you have to look at Roman as the clear and favorite in my book. And it just, you know, you look at the way all the numbers don't lie. You know, Willie talks about all the numbers. He's been putting up the numbers, but really the eyeball test for me, watching him play, it's as good as it gets. And I just don't see him slowing down either. So this will be the first of many nominations, I hope. And I think he should win this one.
Yeah, that's right. He passed both tests, the stats test and the eyeball test. So that's a good category to be in. If you were, just to say you were a coach, and you had to sit here and all you're going to get is this training camp and then a scrimmage against Dallas on the 30th. But unusual set of circumstances where most teams are coming in, you know, completely healthy, which, you know, this time of year, Hal, when you're gearing up for the playoffs, it's just the opposite. I mean, you're sometimes it makes decisions for coaches even easier because there's just guys that can't go or there's injuries and that's not the case. So if everybody's upright and healthy and ready to go, it is going to create some tough decisions. How would you go about trying to figure out, you know, we talked so much through the course of the year about the third D pairing, and a lot of times it was by necessity, right? Because guys were banged up. But there are some interesting battles for ice time, right? And for roster time. And how do you go about doing that with just a training camp and a scrimmage?
Yeah, well, the hard part for me, and I'll cycle back to, you know, the fact that these coaches, there's a lot of unfit to plays right now, and you don't know, you know, you go into training camp or whatever we're calling this, if it is a training camp, you know, you're going to have some guys, hey, your groin's a little sore, why don't you sit out a practice, and, or, you know, with the way things are right now, we don't know, it's unfit to play, so I imagine it's scary for coaches going, I just got to go out there and throw my best hand out on the ice and see what we can get because the guys are coming in and going out. And there's some teams that are having problems right now where I just saw Boston has the majority of their guys on the ice. So that being said, as a coach, you want to, especially in this format, want to have a confident group going out. So I don't think you want to go out there and really test someone's position. And in the beginning of a season in October, when you're just starting up, sometimes you say, hey, you know, this guy is pushing for a job. He's going to nudge you out. And you maybe set a fire and light a fire on him and try and push him that way. With this, I think you need that confidence going into a five-game series. You don't want guys second-guessing themselves. So I think the coaching staff, it looks like, they pretty much stayed with the lines the way they want them, and they're going to have jockeying for different spots and different personnel decisions are going to be made. But I really think you got to go with your gut as a coach, and that's kind of a different experience to go through a training camp where you can control everything. You know, but at the same time, you want to give guys confidence so that they're going into this with that confidence, with the ability to say, there's nothing worse than saying, hey, if I make a mistake, I'm gone. There's no way you can play the game that way. But as a coaching staff, you want to put the best players out there. And so you have to do a good job evaluating early on and then be real honest. There's got to be a lot of dialogue, I imagine, with these players to say, hey, this is where you stand. Position, though.
We're talking to Hal Gill, Predators radio analyst, and we are getting there. We are close to some Nashville Predators hockey coming up, and Hal's coverage is brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts, and that's fitting that Hal is brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts because he knows a little something about that being from Boston. In fact, Hal, I've heard you do the character from the local Dunkin' Donuts in your hometown. Do you want to share a little bit what that guy sounds like?
You would put that on me. Yeah, every morning I go for my dunks. There's a Dunks right down the street. Well, I go to the other one. I like that one better. The lady there behind the counter is way nicer, so I go to see her. She's wicked cool. But, I like my dunks, you know. Being from Boston, you go in there and get an extra large dunks. That sets me up for a good day, you know.
Yeah, so this guy that you're describing could be right alongside of Casey Affleck.
Have you had vanilla nut?
I was just going to reference the Saturday Night Live skit that Casey Affleck did. That is one of the funniest ones of all time, the crazy characters in Boston hanging out at the Dunkin' Donuts. That is good stuff. So, you know, this is interesting how you were just talking about it. I know last week there was a little flare-up, I think, in Montreal. They had some guys that were not available. You just mentioned something in Boston. They're saying unfit to play is their term. They're not revealing who has tested positive. But they did just release, the NHL did, the first 5 days of the Phase 3 testing. And they only had two positive tests for 2,600 tests administered to over 800 players. So, wow, that's pretty good so far. I mean, knock on wood, but that's encouraging. Even though I know they're probably taking a lot of precautions, there's probably, as you mentioned before, how when you haven't played in a while, there's always going to be some guys that pull a muscle here and there in the first few days of camp. That's inevitable too. So some of the unfit to play, you can't assume that they've tested positive, and obviously only two positive tests the first week. That's very encouraging.
That's surprising to me. And those numbers come out, and you have to assume the NHL is being pretty honest, because that you can come back to bite you pretty quick if you're not. So I know that the PA has been all over, the NHLPA has been all over the NHL, and they've been working together, and I can't believe how well they have been working together. Blows my mind, but they seem to have made this a safe environment. I've always said that if we can get through this and get guys healthy, get all the testing so that you're monitored and you know what's going on. Once you get into the bubble where, you know, you're in Edmonton and Toronto, these guys can get locked down. They're not going to be anywhere near anyone else, and that's when I think that's when I'll be pretty sure that this is going to take off and this is going to fly, because you can really control where everyone is and how everyone is doing. Right now, you know, you don't know. You're still testing. You're still going through on that. So it's a real positive sign that the numbers are where they are. So, fingers crossed we keep moving forward like that.
How two guys that I think are going to be big focal points of Arizona, and they've got a lot of underrated guys who are not household names but are really good young players. But the two veterans that everybody's focusing on right now are Phil Kessel and Taylor Hall. I want you to break down those two guys. Let's start with Kessel and how he does his damage, because neither of them have had the huge impact for the Coyotes that they were hoping for at this point. But as we know, everything starts over from here.
Yeah, it's Phil Kessel is, I always say, if I could be anyone, I'd probably want to be him. You know, he goes out and plays hockey.
of anyone, you would say you would want to be him. And you, of course, this is the frame of reference. Hal actually played with Phil.
Yeah, I know Phil. I played with him in the World Championships, and I've been around him. But the way he plays, he can go out there and do nothing. And at the end of the game, you'll look and you'll be like, I didn't notice him except for those two plays where he blew down the wing and scored a goal far side, and for that power play goal or assist that he had. And that's what's scary about him. You could be playing against him, and I've been there where I'm shutting this guy down. He's done nothing. And then all of a sudden he has a goal and assist. Then you go, but I shut him down. Well, he doesn't need much. He just takes, and that's where he's scary. You can put him on any line. He'll hang out, and then all of a sudden he'll score his goal. And he's got explosive speed, and he's got one of the best shots off the rush that I've ever seen. It's not always hard, but it's in stride, and I found his shot so difficult to deflect. You wait for a guy to shoot, and you just put your stick out there and tip it away. His shot was, the delivery is different, and the speed of it was just a fraction quicker than anyone else. So he's deadly in that respect. Taylor Hall is similar. He's got a crazy upside, which scares me playing against him, because if he gets his confidence and gets things going, he can be. We saw what he did in New Jersey a couple of years ago. He was outstanding, just running that team and put up big numbers on a team that wasn't all that good. And so he's a guy, explosive speed, great hands, kind of the total package. He hasn't found a way to be on a winning team, and that's been the knock on him. But the potential is there. And so those two guys are who I'm keying on. But they have a good complement of role players, speedsters, good defensive players that can hold the fort and wait for those guys to step up and do their thing.
Last thing for me, Hal, is constructing. We discussed this when we were doing our live look-in at the practice last week, but how John Hines is going to start instilling the systems here. I would think as this week progresses, you'll probably see more work on the power play and the penalty kill. What are the key points to try to get those grinded? Grinded out, ironed out, the detail that you need for those units to be successful?
It's interesting because I feel like, these guys know what they do. They're pros, and if you look at everyone, you can tell me exactly what these guys are going to do. This guy is good down low on the goal line. Duchesne should be down there. Duchesne can move up and play on the half wall. Johansson loves the half wall. I thought Kyle Turris was one of the best on the power play as the season went on. He was really good on the half wall. Of course, Yossi's got the shot from the point and can set things up. Ryan Ellis has the amazing silencer 1-2 that he can take. So, I could go on. You have all these guys and what they do. I think for the most part, it's working on mentality. And I think that if I was John Hines and the coaching staff, that's what I would be looking at is a mindset going forward of, all right, we're going to make three passes and shoot. We're not going to – the pretty play isn't always going to be there, but we're going to have to work to get those two or three passes and get a shot and then get control of rebounds and attack out of that chaos. You take the shot, everything, all hell breaks loose. You find the puck, and you make that backdoor play again and keep going at it until you score goals. And that's got to be the mindset that I think they're looking at. I think penalty kill-wise, how big was it for Ryan Ellis to come back in the lineup? I think he settled everything down. They have more of a composed, compact way of playing than they did under Laviolette. I think Hines has put that in where, they're going to protect the middle more often, give the shots from the outside. But I really think having Ryan Ellis in there kind of settled everything down and made a big difference. So I think they're at the point where they could be real effective on the penalty kill. And if that mindset gets going on the power play, we know they have the talent. It's just they need to find it. And we saw how bad it can kill you if your power play doesn't perform. And so I am worried about Arizona's penalty kill, because if our power play isn't going, their penalty kill will take advantage of it, and they're good, and they can counter, and they can score goals. So, and we've seen it more often than not, which is scary. I think this is a good time to work on all those things, but it comes down to mindset.
Last thing quickly, Hal, I know game ones are always important, but in a longer series, and especially in hockey, it changes. It goes back and forth, and you don't want to be down a game in a series, but certainly we see so many teams come back. It's not as big of a deal maybe in other sports. What about in a five-game series, in these qualifying rounds? How critical in your mind, or is it, to take game one in a five-game series? Uh-oh, did we lose Hal?
He's still
I really wanted to hear his answer.
I will say this.
Okay, there you are.
Did you lose me?
Yeah, we lost you.
For
I was
just
like,
a second.
Oh, no,
yeah.
I wanted to hear his answer.
Oh, shoot. All right. Well, you know what? My answer is I don't have an answer.
Okay.
I'll be back. You should have just lost me. In a five-game series, I think more importantly than the five-game series is there's no travel. There's no, hey, we got to win this one at home, and trying to, you know, if we get one on the road during these two games, then we're back in business. That's kind of thrown out the window. So you lose one game, I don't think there's a need for an all-out panic. But if your game isn't where, you know, if you lose a game because it goes down to overtime or whatever it is, then you say, all right, we're right there. We don't have to make too many adjustments. As a coaching staff, and you lose a game and you lose it handily, do you change things around, or do you say, all right, whoa, just settle down? Because if you don't change things and it ends up being down 2-0, now you're in trouble. And so you don't have as much leeway to make changes to the way you're playing the game. And then I think the lack of travel is going to be bizarre.
Yeah.
You just sit there and wait for the next game. Everyone's rested. Everyone goes back at her, and you settle it on the ice. But I think there's going to be it's going to be a hard time for both teams to manage emotions, because it is going to be a different feel all the way around. Never mind the fact that you're going to be in a bubble. It's going to be a weird feeling anyway. Something that no one has ever gone through. So it's going to be a challenge. I think that's what's going to make it fun, is that teams are going to have to navigate through this when they don't really know what to expect.
No doubt about it. Thank you for the visit and the impression for Dunkin' Donuts. That was good stuff, Hal, and we look forward to talking to you soon and seeing you soon.
Yeah, I'm going to go get a daiquiri right now. So that gets me through the rest of the day. It's a big one.
He keeps us laughing. He's
day.
Al Gill, a.k.a. Skillsy. Give him a follow on Twitter. He's, as you can tell, he is a fun follow, and he's always putting out funny stuff. So if you need a good laugh, just go follow Hal on Twitter. Chris Mason and Hal Gill do an unbelievable job on Twitter of just keeping you in good spirits. So many times I laugh out loud when I see some of the stuff they put out there. So, Hal, thanks for coming on. We'll come back, and we'll talk a little bit more about the return to play on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.